Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Film Philosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Film Philosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is my good friend and co-host, Deacon Spencer Williams.
What's up, my flock of children?
Oh, that's scary. Don't do that again. And speaking of wandering children, we got with us intern Amy.
Am I just lost somewhere? Is that perpetually what we're going
you
with?
You have yet to be found. So we have an interesting show in store, as we are going to be talking about a film that we actually touched upon briefly in our Leftovers episode, if you want to check that out, from November. And that is our take on 2024's Heretic. So stick around as we dive into this wildly theological conversation about movies and belief and marketing. So we'll dive into that. But before we do, Spencer, give us the opening credits.
Tune in. Sorry. Tune in to brand new episodes each and every week.
Maybe.
Hey, we said week.
Hey, we're going into a new year. We're going to try it.
Okay.
That's our New Year's resolution right there.
There you go.
You can hear us on all your favorite streaming platforms and on our website at filmphilosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmphilosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmphilosophy101.
That's right. We got a website over at filmphilosopherspodcast.com. You can check out all of our wonderful episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thrills, and chills. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmphilosopherspodcast.com. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming. And that's iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audioboom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, and Amazon Music. You could tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Film Philosophers and give us a follow or subscribe. And if you think you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review, because we've earned it.
We have.
Yes, please.
Also, if you have comments for the show, please drop them in the towel section. We love reading those as well. As far as social links, we'll give you the rest of the social links at the end of the episode. As we mentioned, this is a unique episode that we're doing, as it's a follow-up to our Leftovers episode that we did. And you may have noticed that this year we kind of veered away from our typical season of suffering, which is typically where Amy puts us through the gauntlet of ridiculous Christmas movies that are really not worth watching, but we watch them for your listening pleasure, as my brain rots slowly through the course of time, just enduring those. However, this year is different. As you may have noticed, we took a little break at the beginning of the month, and then we are back at it with these episodes, but they're not really Christmas related yet. We may have some down the pipeline before the month is up.
No, but let's just be honest. I broke you guys.
Amy, as I was leading up to, Amy, why don't you explain as to why we aren't doing Season of Suffering this year?
I broke you guys. I'm taking responsibility. We had a great and wild 2023 Season of Suffering, capped off with the viewing of Love Actually for its anniversary.
Oof.
And needless to say,
it took two days to watch this yeah. movie.
It was over 8 hours each day. really did feel like it. And we were completely sloshed by the first 10 minutes of that movie because of the drinking game. Because I know it so well. And that feels like our livers and our souls just need time to detox. And
took a whole year.
Yeah. And considering the hot shenanigans that came out this year, I am so glad that we are avoiding the Season of Suffering, because Lord knows there are things even I didn't want to see.
Yeah. Last year's viewing of the aforementioned film was a hot mess, to say the least. It was absolutely one of those types of viewings that obviously we here at this table won't forget.
Nope.
Because we can't. And if you've listened to the episode, you will understand why very quickly. That was a very interesting time in our show where we allowed Amy to delegate that particular film for what we were doing. And thankfully, we have yet to give her any more reins of anything because we just, anytime she asks for any kind of creative control, we just say the words Love Actually and she stops.
Yeah, so, no, that's about right. I mean, the
option.
You can
also just sing Christmas All Around Me, too.
No, God.
I'm feeling it in my fingers.
So, yeah, Amy kind of broke us on that. And that's unfortunately, we haven't done any holiday. But here's the thing. December is usually the time of the month or the time of the year where all last minute award entries for the next, you know, for the next upcoming award season, they get compacted into December. So if we get a chance to review anything in there or anything that's worth reviewing, we try to fit it into the month of December as well as, you know, having some fun later on. So hopefully we'll try to figure out a good holiday extra credit episode or something that we can squeeze in there. But for the time being, there's a lot of really good movies that are coming out this month that might not be Christmas themed. However, it's still relevant to the month because it's when the movie's going to drop. So.
Yeah, we'll work on that. But unfortunately, if you were having goals of hearing these fine humans speak about Netflix's The Merry Gentleman.
Nope.
Or Netflix's Hot Frosty.
Nope. We've heard of that one. No.
Nope. It ain't happening this year.
Thank God.
This is one holiday that we will not be on.
Yes, but there's monstrosities abound for next year.
Yeah, yep. We don't know what that looks like because I try to be consistent.
And speaking of monstrosity, that does bring us to our conversation of the evening. And that is our full review and breakdown of the recently dropped A24 film. And that is Heretic. This film, which honestly flew under the radar for a lot of people, was a very unique film that, you know, delved into the world of theology and belief and ultimately floored Spencer enough to want to actually host a whole episode just solely on this particular film, even though we had initially thought to put it in the Leftovers episode, but Spencer spoke about it so highly that we just decided, okay, we need to talk about it fully. And honestly, it was very necessary for us to do this conversation. So, yep. Spencer, without further ado, why don't you give us that official synopsis goodness?
Two young missionaries are forced to prove their faith when they knock on the wrong door and are greeted by a diabolical Mr. Reed, becoming ensnared in his deadly game of cat and mouse.
Written and directed by Scott Beck and Brian Woods, the film stars Sophie Thatcher, Chloe East, and Hugh Grant. And quite literally, those are the only three people outside of Topher Grace, who has a appearance here and there. Those are the only three people that you really see throughout the entire film. So, a couple of things about the film. Hugh Grant once stated in an interview, quote, "I'm getting bored of playing obvious roles and being typecast," end quote. Writer-directors Scott Beck and Brian Woods saw this interview and wrote the role of Mr. Reed with Hugh as their top choice for the role. Obviously, they are not aware of Hugh Grant's, you know, creepiness in his previous roles. So this fit pretty well. Mm-hmm.
Like a glove.
Yeah. So.
Like a well-worn glove. Mm-hmm.
Another key piece of information, Sophie Thatcher and Chloe East were both raised Mormon, actually, so they were able to give valuable insight into the religion when shooting the movie. Of course, they're no longer Mormons. Not out of a result of the film, but prior to, they're no longer Mormon. So they're no longer Mormon. So that's an interesting tidbit that's really fun to know, especially when we get into the nitty-gritty of the film. And last but not least, which I thought this was pretty cool of the filmmakers, and of course with A24 being such a huge advocate for creativity and not anonymity, but autonomy within actors and their performances and so forth like that. The end credits of this film feature the statement, quote, "No generative AI was used in the making of this film," end quote.
Ooh. shots fired across the bow, shots fired across the bow.
Yeah, ever since that Coca-Cola ad came out.
Coca-Cola, there's so many different commercials out there for the holidays that are just so AI-driven.
Is it really a big problem? I set up my life to not see ads, so I don't know what people are seeing.
So I'm in marketing, so I work in marketing, and there are so many ads out there that are utilizing either Midjourney, ChatGPT, even Adobe. Adobe is now throwing its hat into the generative AI ring for video, and not just their images, which they've been doing for a while. And there are so many different ads out there right now, currently videos that they've used the AI model to create their advertising, which it's ridiculous, because a lot of these design types and these, you know, models that they're creating, they're based off of either previous work that this company has done, like the Coca-Cola ad. They've done things like that before. They're just lazy now at this point. And I think one of the things, as a marketer who is fighting against being becoming obsolete due to AI, like, the one thing that you have to remind companies is that AI is a tool. It is not the solution, you know, and so when you have something that creates, you know, assets to use in the overall, like, creation of advertising you know, whatever you're building, it shouldn't be the end all. It should be just one facet of all of it. And the problem is, a lot of these companies are just like, oh, Midjourney or ChatGPT, create me a, you know, 30-second video of Coca-Cola trucks driving down the road in a, you know, theme like this, upload video, use this as reference, blah, 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 blah. Like, that's just cheap, and that's cheating. And you're taking away actual creative minds who can actually build this and make it polished. I don't know if a lot of CEOs or a lot of the people who are making those decisions really truly see the flaws in it, and they just see a finished product. And I got a lot to say about it, because again, in marketing, I am constantly with my ear to the ground of like, yes, I will always advocate for the usage of AI, but never in the reliance on AI. And that's the big difference. And for going back to this with A24 and the filmmakers here making the stance like, hey, just so you know, nothing in here utilized generative AI, nothing in here used AI. Our characters are their own. Our performances belong to those actors. And everything you saw was either built or on set, or we were on site for the staging and for the background. So that really does say a lot. And then that just further, heightens the status that A24 carries around this time versus what everyone else is doing. Mm-hmm. So, Ames, you've been pretty quiet over there.
No, I had just been doing some research on when we talked that, you know, no AI was used, about the depths that these filmmakers actually went to immerse themselves and to make sure that they were having immerse themselves in multiple other religions, but also reading and having conversations with ex-Mormons, Mormons, whomever they could, to actually make sure that they were putting out the information correctly and to mirror the subject matter. So that makes sense why they're like, listen, we did all of our homework. We didn't go ask the internet to collect things and just make it so.
Yeah. So diving in, obviously this movie, it has been out for a little bit. So you have been warned. This review will have spoiler alert. So you have been warned. Let's talk about first impressions before going into the film. Expectations. My bad. Expectations going into the film. What were some of your thoughts based on the marketing and based on, you know, what you saw in the trailer and whatnot? I know, Spencer, you kind of touched on yours a little bit. Why don't you go ahead and start? Cause, I believe yours is a little bit more.
Okay. Well, actually, you were the one to point it out for me, because like, I remember we were going to see some other movie and you pointed out the poster, which was, I'm going to be honest, it was very unassuming and very like,
falls into the background of your eye, like, because I did not even notice it really. So that was really the main thing I remember is the posters didn't really tell you anything. I don't even remember if I saw a trailer for the movie. But I might have, and I might have seen Hugh Grant being kind of creepy, and I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. I think those early trailers were just super minimalistic on the film, so they were more so like just in the teaser realm rather than full trailers.
Right.
What about you, Ames?
Expectations. So I have a problem with horror slash thriller slash anything that gives me anxiety. And even on the first teaser, where literally all they did was they lit Hugh Grant in just enough way that the glasses did the evil the evil shadow thing on his forehead. And I was like, I don't want to see this. And I remember Eddie looked at me and goes, no, you're going to see this. And I was like, I don't want to see this. I have no desire to. I don't like just personally having young women intentionally trapped, regardless of how charming their captor is.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You still find Hugh Grant charming?
No.
Okay. Because you literally just said.
Because I thought that was just like an overall.
Yeah. It's an overall like that's.
Mm-mm. You still find Hugh Grant charming.
I never found Hugh
Now, they
Grant
try to
charming.
Make some of the, I'm holding you captive, but I'm so charming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But needless to say, my expectations going into this movie was, oh gosh, I'm actually doing this. So I didn't really come in with expectations because I was trying not to be scared. That was my big goal.
As far as the marketing goes for this film, I saw the same poster and I saw the teaser, but I didn't really see much beyond that because I don't know if it got as big of a push as it probably should have. Mm-hmm. My biggest, I guess, expectation for this film was that it was going to be based in faith. And not just because it was called Heretic, but because like the teaser has, you know, two girls like coming to the door and hello, can we talk to you about our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ? Or, you know, and it's like you've experiences that you've had before, whether it's with Jehovah Witnesses or Mormons, you know, going door to door, the idea of religion was going to be a topic. And when you include the title of it being Heretic, you know, okay, it's going to be a very continuous thread that runs through all of this film. So, That was pretty much my biggest expectation because honestly, I think I forgot about it for the rest of November. I didn't really hear much about it. I didn't really see reviews or anything. So I had totally, it just blanked on me up until, again, we had our conversation about the Leftovers episode and you brought it up and I'm like, oh my gosh, we missed out on a really good one. So here we are. So let's move to first impressions right outside the gate. Let's start with Amy in terms of first impressions. As soon as the film was done, what were your thoughts?
That was certainly an unexpected, creepy brain scratcher, but it made me think. It brought
head scratcher.
Head scratcher. Yeah, well, head scratcher means confusion. And I don't know if it was so much confusion as it was of trying to collect all my thoughts because the way that it ends, it kind of took some more questions and left me going, was there no answer? Like, really? What's going on? But yeah, I'd like to talk about that later.
Okay.
Spencer.
Okay. So coming out of the theater back in October, I was like, oh.
Has it been that long?
Yeah, I saw it in October.
Oh my God.
Its release was late October. It was like, I want to say a few days before Halloween.
Oh.
Which was actually a really good timing schedule for this movie. But yeah, I was like, oh, I'm really impressed with Hugh Grant in this movie. Like, he was honestly the thing that just like blew me away with how like in the pocket of how creepy he could be. Like, he was right there the whole time and I was like, dang. And then when you actually into the story of this movie, I'm like, I was really kind of stunned. This was really well crafted for there being so little marketing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I agree. This was definitely a unique place for Hugh Grant to be outside of being a ridiculous villain type in like Paddington 2.
Or Dungeons and Dragons.
Or Dungeons and Dragons, where he played, again, another silly villain type. This one, he just played a very nefarious and you know, almost maniacal to a certain extent villain in this particular film. This was a very thought-provoking kind of movie. Seeing as the three of us have kind of our origins in religion, and a lot of our core beliefs are still kind of founded on, you know, those thoughts and beliefs and a lot of our ethics, and, you know, we still adhere to a lot of that. It's very interesting how this film poses a lot of questions that, you know, that would create a conversation in that arena very easily. On both sides of that spectrum. This movie was smart. This movie was definitely as Amy said, a head scratcher or a brain scratcher. And yeah, I really kind of want to dig into it because it definitely leaves you with a message. For me, at least, I kind of understood, in my opinion, I feel like I kind of grasped what the filmmakers were trying to get across in this film fairly quickly, mostly because I've been in that space of, you know, belief and disbelief and theology and kind of things like that. Why are you looking at me weird, Spence?
Oh, I'm not. I'm just listening. I'm thinking about my own stuff.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and dive right in straight with into our performance of the film. And obviously, as we mentioned, we have Sophie Thatcher, Chloe East, and Hugh Grant, who are the main.
That's pretty much it. That's it.
Like, besides those three and Topher Grace, no one else has a name in this movie.
Yeah.
No.
The titles.
Yeah, they're literally like Sister Barnes and Sister Paxton and Mr. Reed. Even Topher Grace's character is Elder Kennedy.
Yeah. And, like, and even then, you're like, I don't even think he's on screen enough to get, like, even if he hadn't introduced himself, he wouldn't have counted as like as a named character.
Yeah.
And that's it. We appreciate you, Topher. Thumbs up.
Let's see. The Sophie Thatcher played Sister Barnes. She was the dark-haired actress.
Mm-hmm.
And then Chloe East played Sister Paxton. She was the one with the glasses. The unique aspect or the unique perspective that each one of these performers take are kind of on both sides of that belief spectrum, where one is, and it's kind of like when it comes to any faith, you have those that are kind of born into it and born and raised into it. And then people who acquire it after the fact. You know, that's the kind of dichotomy you have with these two. One is immediately, like, you know, born and raised in the church, a part of the Mormon faith right from the get-go because her family was. The other one, you know, had a life situation happen. Mom ended up getting into the faith after the fact, and they became Mormon. And I think it was really, really smart on both of these performers, performance-wise, to really kind of highlight those different perspectives. Because if we had two actresses of the same kind of belief system, I guess, or even the amount of belief they had, it would have made for a very, very boring movie, honestly. Mm-hmm. And each one of these young ladies did a phenomenal job,
mm-hmm,
as, you know, the individuals they were portraying. It wasn't like so much of an archetype that you're usually used to. It felt very genuine. It felt very informed, like they were doing an informed performance. And honestly, I if they would have came to me not as actresses but as that, I would have believed that they were of the Mormon faith, like, yeah, hands down.
Well, and I think that also kind of feeds into the fact that they both were Mormon,
mm-hmm,
at one time, but that And that was part of some of the nuances in the performances, because they understood what was being asked of them, but also of the writing, where, like I had previously said, I had done the research, and the directors and the writers had taken steps to make sure that they were connecting with people, having those conversations, checking to make sure, like fact checking. They read the Book of Mormon. They talked to a lot of people to make sure that what they were putting out there was also was reflective of the people, not just the faith. And I believe that helped not only inform those performances, but give them more weight, especially when you look at the dichotomy between Sister Barnes and Sister Paxton, especially when we first meet them. Like, the way that we first meet them is so unexpected, and it literally just kind of jumps into, like, we've snuck in on a conversation between the two of them that feels like teenagers. And you forget, I always forget this, but Mormon missionaries, when they go out on mission, they're usually 17, 18, 19, 20, like they're very young adults. So those conversations that they're having, where literally we start out and they're having a conversation about condoms. They're like, oh, this is what I think, you know, this is spoilers, but it's literally the opening sequence where they're having a conversation about, you know, the marketing for Magnum condoms and the difference between that. And you're like, is this, we're like, what did I just sit down to? So.
Yeah. There's a lot that goes into their performance in terms of, like, a lot of the makeup for, you know, how they proceed and the decisions that they make and so forth and whatnot that happens. On the other side of this spectrum, obviously we have our, you know, antagonist, which is one Hugh Grant, which, I mean, I already find him creepy enough as it is. So the man kind of fits the mold for this particular character pretty well. I mean, he could have played this character in any one of his other roles and would have fit just as well. So, like, I feel like what was he in Love Actually?
He was the prime minister.
Yeah, he could have turned into this. Yeah. And it would have made perfect sense. So, but yeah, it's Hugh Grant. So obviously Hugh Grant is a skilled performer. And when it comes to this, he gave it his all, and it was an absolute, you know, scary performance from Hugh Grant, but nevertheless, it was a good performance. So, moving forward into this story. Now this story is weird, because we have two young women who are, following up with essentially, people that they had spoken to prior to asking about information for, more information about the Mormon faith. They end up showing up at Mr. Reed's, doorstep, late one, almost close to the evening, late afternoon. It is beginning to rain. He invites them in. And then that's kind of where you start seeing this ball rolling as to what Mr. Reed's intentions are. You come to find out Mr. Reed is wanting to talk about theology, wanting to talk about faith, wanting to talk about, you know, the makeup of their beliefs specifically. And it turns into this very, again, this movie is uncomfortable. Mm. Hugh Grant is uncomfortable as just a human and an actor. But in this particular film, that is, like, the dial is turned up to 11. And a lot of these scenes are just really kind of, they're interesting and still difficult to sit through, because it's like you're engaged and you're wanting to see what they're going to say. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know if you should be asking that question, or this isn't really a conversation to be had with, like, two young girls who are quote unquote missionaries here. Maybe you should be talking to, like, someone higher up about some of this stuff. And it felt like, it felt more like he wanted to know their answers and not just an answer. Mm-hmm. and then, so it kind of devolves into, this pressuring of, you know, needing to see his wife, because he said his wife was there. She's not there. I.e. back to the poster, which the poster is of just a blueberry pie candle, which you don't really understand what that is until you've seen, like, either the trailers or you've seen this film. And Hugh Grant has this whole ploy going on that his wife is in the back making a blueberry pie. And ultimately, there is no blueberry pie and there is no wife, and that it's just a scented candle. And they end up going, he ends up forcing them into a room where they have to choose a way out through the back door, through a choice between these two doors. It turns ultimately in like this labyrinth-esque type of, you know, storyline that where they have to figure their way out. They have to understand what's happening, and it gets very deep. It gets very theological. It gets very interesting from that point on. And I don't want to give away too much as to the makeup of that story, because that in itself is an experience to be had on its own. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about a little bit about kind of what this movie's trying to do. Now, right away, you would think, okay, this movie is absolutely a take on how humanity views faith, how humanity views religion. Hugh Grant is ultimately trying to get these girls to understand what he understands and comprehends by the end of the film. Like, that's his whole ploy. He wants them to understand that there is no one religion that, based off of what everybody knows, there's only the religion that he believes is the true driving force of humanity. And, you know, and it gets pretty deep. Like, it goes through all these different religions, all these different avenues of not just Christianity, Judaism, Judaism and Islam, but he then devolves into, you know, Egyptian religion or religion based in, like, you know, in other faiths and other, you know, Ganesh and all these other deities that share similarities to that of, you know, Jesus Christ, Allah, and what is it for Judaism? Isn't it just God?
Yahweh. It's Yahweh.
Yahweh, right?
Yeah, just God.
I'm looking at the current Jew at the table. Yahweh. So, okay, just checking. Hey.
Hi.
But yeah, it gets really involved. Like, this movie really does take, like, the foot onto the accelerator and doesn't let up in terms of the introduction of a lot of different, like, mindsets and a lot of different perspectives on faith from Hugh Grant, who I would never have thought would even care. Like, I don't know his personal beliefs, but there was a lot that was, it seemed very natural as to how informative he was for this role.
Yeah.
You know? But again, those conversations really do kind of spark a different kind of response from each of the girls. One being a little bit more kind of passive and like, okay, well, we'll go through this door that you want us to go through. And the other one's like, no, it doesn't matter. He's, you know, it doesn't care what he, you know, what you feel like he wants you to go through. He wants to know what we're going to genuinely go through. And it creates this unique dichotomy between the girls as far as where their belief is, not only just in their religion, but even in themselves. And what?
No, I agree.
I'm waiting for someone to interject, because I'm like, I'm going 100 miles an hour. And I'm like,
I was like, Spencer, do you want to talk? I mean, because I truly do see where Eddie's coming from, but I've heard nor hide nor hair nor peep nor meep from you in relation to, like, how you felt the story was moving or character development or where it kind of hit for you.
Okay, so this movie's broken up into sections. There is a section when they're in the, like, entry, like, welcome area, if you will, and then there's, like, the fake church section, and then there's the basement section, which I'm pretty sure we're not going to talk terribly much about since a lot of big things happen there. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk in the fake church section. I thought that was probably, like, that in, like, the welcome area, the conversations around religion there were the most interesting to me. Because just going into, like, such detail on, you know, how things are just iterations upon iterations, and, like, Hugh Grant's character explaining down the line, like, trying to, like, lay out what he, like, truly believes.
Yeah.
I found, like, fascinating. Like, I was just, like, ingesting it. Like, normally, sometimes when I'm watching movies, I'm like, yeah, but this, yeah, but that. But I was just like, so like, yeah, let's go. Where are you going with this?
Yeah.
And I think what, like, what really, like I was into the movie then, but what really won me is when, I believe it was Sister Barnes, like, fights back on those, like you're saying it's iterations, but, like, you're saying that, like, you know, Judaism isn't as popular as Christianity, but you're not accounting for the Holocaust. You're not doing all these other things. And I'm like, go get it right there, because you're doing fantastic. Yeah. Like, it was, like, that, like, the back and forth between, like, these three characters, fascinating to watch.
Yeah, I agree. Like, Sister Barnes was definitely the one who was willing to still be mindful of the situation, but also not to back away from her faith in those moments, and to recognize, like, well, no, because you mentioned this, but, like, this is not, and then you didn't mention that, you know, one of these things is not like the other, where Horus has the head of a falcon and blah, 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 blah. It's like, and she's noting all these different aspects, and it's informative. It's weird because, again, it does that whole, you know, elegant train wreck where you're like, this is a hard conversation to watch and listen to, but I'm just stuck like glue wanting to see how this devolves into whatever's going to happen next. And it's so unique, especially coming from Hugh Grant, who's already with his vocal ability, he's already a great orator. He's already, you know, got that, you know, English charm, as Amy calls it.
English charm.
And so him explaining how, you know, the different iterations of religion are kind of like different iterations of Monopoly.
Mm-hmm.
And how he talks about, like, the Hollies, that one song that they did is was riffed on by, you know,
Radiohead
Creep. With Creep, and then by Lana Del Rey. And it's like I'm like, okay, this is a lot of evidence. And at one point in time, I was like, well, dude, okay, I'll take you at face value. That's a lot of information. And then I was literally like snapped back to, well, hold on. Because when Sister Barnes speaks up and she's like, well, this is that, and this is, I'm like, dang it. I should have been paying attention better. Like, I got mad at myself because the character in the movie figured it out before I did. But yeah, it's such a conversation that you would almost feel could happen in any setting where we come from.
Mm-hmm.
Like, could easily have been a conversation where we actually, either one of us, all three of us, could have been in with someone else,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it took that whole sense of belief to a whole different level for me.
One of the other things I liked about this movie is, the characters, none of these three characters are dumb.
Yeah.
Like, no, not at all.
They are 100%. All intelligent people. And, like, you know, like, they're all trying to, like, get their point across. Or, you know, in the case of Sister Paxton, she's just trying to get out of their life.
Yeah.
She starts out, she's not in that boat of, like, oh, I'm trying to get out of life. She's just like, I'm really excited. Mm-hmm. I have a plan. Do you know, now can we tell you about Heavenly Father's plan for you? Like, girl. Like,
yeah, she was the one who was not reading the signs, because, like, you could tell really early on into, like, the conversation that Sister Barnes was, like, picking up on the, okay, something is off, while Paxton was still, like, trying to, like, do her spiel. And, like, I think that was probably the hardest part of this movie. It was, like, that initial, like, tension of, like, a trap is forming around these two, and I'm not sure how much they know they're in trouble, you know?
Yeah.
Until it's way too late.
Yeah.
100%.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, well, I think the other thing that really, like, if we're talking about the setup and the design of the way this house is, where you have the welcome area where it's very much like it's a foyer. It reminded me, if we're having conversations about churches and moving in, and when we get to that second space, which is like a church/study/chapel/whatever. And then you have the punishment room. That's what I'm going to just call the basement. It's a punishment room. But in that initial foyer area, when they're sitting there and you're just watching them, like, you see Barnes is seeing, like, something 100% isn't right in here. And then you see all the little ticks where anybody else, and it wouldn't be whether it's male or female, if they weren't so, like, set on, let me share our faith. Like, you have that world weariness almost with Sister Barnes, where she knows like something's just off, but she's trying to be supportive of Sister Paxton, who hasn't converted anybody, and it's raining outside. And like, you see where she has a little bit of that, like, it's going to be okay and we're going to get through it. But Sister Paxton just seems almost like she's got blinders on and she can't figure it out. And then when he leaves and he's like, oh, just come through, come meet my wife. And they're in that room and they realize that the door won't open and they do nothing else. Like, the horror brain in me goes, you're in like the escape room. Did we check everything in the room before we ask for help? And we didn't. And I was just like, it's going to be okay, but we don't ask our kidnapper for help. So like, it was a very well balanced, like, not only the dialogue, but the fact that he was pushing for answers of their personal belief and their personal faith, which is something that drives even in the foyer, even in the entrance. As soon as he started saying those things, instead of like, oh, well, we need to excuse ourselves, they kept letting that space for like, oh, just a little bit longer. Oh, we'd really love to meet your wife now. Instead of, oh, unfortunately, we need to get up and leave. Like, so you have that fine line dance of the courtesy and the push for personal safety, where you're like, where do we balance with our religion or our religion is saying we have to be here and do everything that we can. At the cost of
her, or at least the expectations of what we should be converting or returning with, in terms of essentially the ROI.
Yeah,
you know, the building on that return on investment of them going out and talking to people and coming back with quote unquote converts or baptized people.
Spoken like a true marketer with ROI.
I mean,
what it is.
But that's what it is, and like. The other thing, if I want to kind of bring up for story, that something helped to build tension, because this set isn't giant. Mm-mm. This is a very small set. The cinematographer, Chung Hoon Chung is his name. He actually was a cinematographer for 2003's Old Boy and for The Handmaiden, which is another one. But he has... And he also, I think he did The Last Night in Soho, but the tension that he builds and also the way that these scenes are set up, some of like the darkness, I swear to you, just the hallway with the door just vaguely open. I was like, no, sir, we are not going down that hallway. I don't care how much help you need, my darlings. Like, you gonna figure it out yourself. It was so well done.
Yeah. And again, those scenes that they really do linger on for what feels like forever. That opening scene in the house, or not opening, but the beginning scene where they're in that front room, it is a lingering scene that is heightened by the moments like when the lights go out, and because they're all on timers, or something happens, it just accentuates those like quiet moments throughout the entire scene. And then the build up through those hallways, the whole setting of this entire film is very unique and very thoughtful.
It's very calculated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then of course we get to, I don't want to get into the rest of the,
we want to, but we don't, because it's really something to be experienced.
Yeah.
Yes,
it really is. There's just so much that you can really talk about without allowing people to have the pure experience of this film, especially if you come from a background of faith, or you have a history in some form of theology, or, you know, religion or faith. This movie just carries a lot of that, I guess, a lot of those questions and doubts that anyone who's gone through it may have. And it creates the conversation, just kind of like what we're talking about now. Because, I mean, this movie ultimately kind of tells you that, in no uncertain terms, that the only true faith that is to be believed in is in a sense of a man-made thing. Which the process as to how it gets there is a whole other thing to begin with. I would say that this movie is a great take on the religious complexity of the world we're in today and the idea of belief, if I didn't think that the movie was lying to me. So why I say that is because at the beginning of the movie, Amy mentioned it briefly, but at the beginning of the movie, we come into a scene and we're literally just dropping in. It's a drop shot from the view of the sky down to where the girls are. And you're, like Amy said, you are dropped into the middle of a conversation where one of the girls is talking about if she believes, if the other girl believes that these certain types of condoms are actually really that big, if they're a certain size or whatever. And there's this whole conversation about, well, it's just marketing. You shouldn't believe everything you hear, you know. And the other one's like, well, you know, my sister's whatever says that they're really whatever or something. And she's like, well, someone else corroborated this with me, blah, blah, blah. And while you're still like this camera pan is still going down on to where the girls are, it's literally the backside of where they're sitting on a bench. And on the backside, there's literally a advertisement for condoms. Mm-hmm. And it dawned on me at the end of this film that in the midst of everything we just saw, this movie is not about faith. It's about marketing.
That's his takeaway, mind you, because other people believe other things, but it's a great take.
Yeah, this is my own personal opinion. I feel like this movie is about people watching movies like this or people taking the premises of films like this and creating elaborate conversations based off of what they take out of the film as face value. In fact, we get many instances where Sister Barnes, going back to the conversation that she has with Hugh Grant's Mr. Reed character, where she says, you didn't mention this, you didn't mention that. It feels like, you know, your argument is kind of flimsy. I'm not ultimately saying I'm not buying what you're selling. And it ultimately turns into this movie where by the end of the film, the idea is you should buy into what you want because it's what you choose, not because of what everyone or what the media tell you. Like, and that's what I gathered out of it. Cause it was like, from a marketing perspective, I was like, why are you talking about condoms at the early part of this film when it's about religion and whatnot? And I continue watching the movie and I'm like, I think this movie is about marketing. I think this movie is about the fact that we take things at face value. But Ames apparently has a separate idea. Yeah. After reading all these other reviews from other people and their thoughts.
No, because
I gathered my own thoughts on my own. I didn't have to read anything, but okay, go ahead.
Yeah, that's great. And not what I was going to speak of, because we can't really talk about what the quote unquote one true religion is, because it ends up spoiling the movie if we have the conversation. Right. Mm-hmm. So something that I had thought about in it after thinking about it before review reading, because I was trying to figure out what different outlets had said. So I looked at like Christian Post, what they had written about the review of it, and the Salt Lake City, Utah, like Tribune, what they had written about it, because those are centralized places with big ones. And then there was one from The Guardian that talked about that they had reached out, which was very interesting that Salt Lake City didn't reach out to them, but they had reached out to, like, apparently there's a show called The Secret Lives of Mormons, and they had reached out to them and that community. And so that's how I was finding out additional information and understanding and how they were feeling about not only what this movie spoke to, but what it meant for them as when they had gone on missions, how it had impacted them, and it came down to what religion was asking of these people, especially in
what religion in general was asking. Yeah. Or what their religion?
Well, for the ones from The Guardian, which is a UK paper, they emphasized what Mormonism asks of their people, even though they also had a statement from the church, from LDS, that was like, this is totally like slapping our volunteers in the face of something that is sacred And it was very heated of like, you're making fun of us and not like a ho, ho like, huh, we get, you know, it's so funny. And then when it came to the Christian Post, she was talking about how the just Hugh Grant's certainty in all of it, that it's the certainty that he will sway anybody to join or find his religion. And then she tried to, on the back end of her review, sway you back towards the understanding, you know, of Jesus Christ and not only what he represents, but traditional Christian belief. So the thing that I had been looking at and trying to understand was, what makes Hugh Grant's character so unnerving in relation to these conversations is the fact, is not only the fact that he's older, they're younger, he's constantly prodding and testing their personal beliefs against like his knowledge. And so it comes into play also this question of like, well, just because you've been around longer and I know better, you should follow me and do what I want. And it creates this, these questions of, do we follow people based on certainty? Is it really, is it confidence? And so those were questions that I was raising in relation to reading that. Mr. Oh, I don't have an opinion until I read something.
So what is your opinion? Because I still have yet to hear it.
Well, we literally can't talk about the conversation that I want to have a conversation about, because if I do, then I'm going to ruin the movie.
You can give an opinion, because the only way you can give an opinion is giving away the end of the film.
I want to talk about what he defines as the one true religion, but I can't really do that on the podcast without ruining.
I feel like we can talk about what it is without going into detail of how he gets there. What do you think, Spence?
I mean, we can try it. I mean, okay. Listeners, if you've made it this far and this movie sounds interesting,
just go watch it.
Yeah. Because like, let's deep dive into it.
Okay.
Okay. So at the end.
So this is
hold it for a couple of good seconds.
Hold on. So all right.
Okay. So we get to it. Hugh Grant has decided that the only true religion is control. It's fear and it's control. And the one thing that makes him, in my opinion, so dangerous is the certainty that he has that those are the only things that have ever made religion or even faith as a whole something that is not only viable, but is possible, where when he has the conversation and he's like, these are all of the myths, you know, religion, essentially he tries to boil it down to religion is just a myth.
He tries to mansplain religion.
Yeah, really hard. And he's going over that. And I brought up when I was talking to Eddie about it that originally those myths, the creation of it was trying to understand and put an explanation to why things happen. And that's what made sense. And he comes from, Hugh Grant, Mr. Reed, comes from such a place of certainty that there is no other way. This is the only way. And he and in and of himself makes himself God by acting on it is just like super unnerving. And I don't like it.
So what's your point? What you still have yet to say, like what your belief the movie is about. Like I'm,
people with certainty that come to the table, a quote unquote know it all, are actually the most dangerous person in the room.
Okay. Cool. All right, Spencer.
Look at the marketing. This is Christopher Nolan. What do you think Interstellar is about? Oh, it's about love. No, it's about time. Do you remember that conversation?
No, that's a fun conversation. I don't know. Amy's still on her high horse over there. Anyway, go ahead, Spence. What are your thoughts on the film?
Okay. So, I get what you're saying about the movie being about marketing. I see that really well. But I also, maybe I'm coming from a cynical point, but like, isn't that what religion is? This kind of just marketing.
Yeah, they talk about it again because they even mention it in the film, like how he says like they're essentially salespeople for their faith, and they talk about it, which I feel like just kind of feeds back into that wheel of like this is just this is an exercise in the resilience of people not needing to be, you know, Jack of all trades, and making sure that they don't know everything and not act as such. Because that's essentially what Hugh Grant does, is he flaunts whatever knowledge he has without really being tested and pushed back.
Yeah.
Which is like many marketers who just go gung-ho because they feel like they have the confidence to do so and whatnot. Which again goes back to my belief that the intention of this movie is not to be taken seriously. This movie warns you at the beginning that you shouldn't believe everything you hear or see on TV or in advertising.
True.
So, but go ahead. Sorry.
No, that's what I was going to say. but like, yeah, no, this movie, if you're asking like, you know, overall thoughts on the movie or like,
or at least just the story wise, because I don't know how we got into the theme of like what the movie was.
What's the question? ask me a question, so I will answer that.
So at this point in time, what are your thoughts like for about the movie? Like, what are your thoughts on the like the main takeaways from this film?
Oh, okay. I mean, honestly, I feel like the main takeaway is people are dumb. Like, and let me flesh this out. Nobody likes to ask questions anymore. People like to have certainty in answers. Mm-hmm. And that is not helpful in like life. You have to be curious and actually reach out for answers. Like, and that's kind of like, that's what the movie is like, you know, wrestling with in like the earlier parts of it, where like, you know, like they're going back and forth about board games and nonsense. But like, I really feel like the takeaway from this movie for me is that it is important to think.
Yeah. 100%.
Because like, honestly, I feel like we're in a bit of a crisis of that right now, mm-hmm. where people don't really fit. Example, real life example. There was a video of this couple with a Tesla, and they needed to put air into their tires. They were attempting to fill their tires with propane.
I'm sorry, what?
I don't understand. There was a big label, like it. Like the weird thing is that it didn't, like her reaction once she realized what she was doing didn't seem super fake. So I was like, I don't know how to take this. Like, I know things, you have to take things with a grain of salt on the internet. Mm-hmm. But like, it's, I feel like we keep seeing things like that where people are doing just insane things.
Yeah.
And so coming back to this movie, I really feel like, oh, like one of like, maybe like the main thing took away, but like one of them is just like, you know, think, ask questions. Because even if someone brings you a solid, like I have all the answers, maybe try to poke at it.
Yeah.
Because like, you never know what you're going to like pop with like asking basic questions.
Well, cause we come from an era where like, we come from a time where if it was spoken across the pulpit or on a stage or whatever, and if it was spoken well enough, it had to be, you know, gospel, whether it had to do with religion or had to do with whatever, it was something to take, you know, at face value that, okay, this was, you know, this is something that's being told to me and it's coming from an, you know, an official authoritative capacity. So it must be, you know, legit. And then over time, we've grown to ask questions and we've grown to push back against the officials. And when we have, we've then created a generation of skeptics who have become authorities in themselves of being skeptical. So now, like, take for instance critics. My perspective is my own. Mm-hmm. I will preface usually with, in my opinion, this is my thoughts, never to the mindset of like, you need to believe this because this is how it goes when it comes to movies. And certain things I'm a little bit more passionate than others, But all in all, it's opinion based. That's why I do what I do. But there are certain people who believe that their opinion is gospel and that that is the end all be all of what this should be or how it should be translated. Mm. And so that I feel like is kind of where we're at in this particular film, where it's like, yes, you are against the man. You are pushing back against the, you know, the mainstream rhetoric. However, this is also just your research and your opinion and where you have gotten thus far in your journey. It doesn't mean that it's the only way to get to that point, or it doesn't mean this is the only path that this information will take you to. And I think this is kind of that part of that film, again, going back to being sold a bill of goods, you know, at face value, no matter who's selling it, you know, whether it's the person on the pulpit or the person behind the computer or the old man on the, you know, in the nice house or the young ladies who are, you know, in the long skirts with, you know, labels and badges on their shirts or whomever it may be. If it's a, you know, an officer or, you know, a person on the corner, you know, whatever they tell you, always take it with the mindset that everything, everything comes with a grain of salt. Nothing should be taken at face value, no matter what, because, you know, we live in an age where you can't trust anybody. You can't trust anybody fully, you know, unless you are tied or tethered to that person or you have a relationship with that person. If it's somebody you don't know that is giving you information that you're not fully 100%, you know, comprehensive in, do your due diligence, you know. And I think that's kind of where this goes at. What do you think, Amy? Because
I'm what?
You're quiet.
Yeah, because I'm listening. Like... Wow. Don't.
I didn't say nothing.
It's doing it again.
I didn't say anything.
All right, let's all play nice. We just had to watch a Hugh Grant movie last year that did not go well.
Yeah, all Amy's fault.
Thanks, I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Like, this movie really does raise questions, just in general, and builds space to have conversations that are wholly uncomfortable, and I think should also simultaneously be uncomfortable, because in uncomfort we can find growth. We also find the places that haven't fully either healed or we're like, nope, that's a hard no for me. And I think with this, for me, it felt as much as Eddie said, mansplaining. It was a reminder of literally a man in a position of power who has essentially locked and barred all the doors, and you're forced to sit there and cannot get out. Mm. And you are being beholden to his every whim and will, which we see when we get into that, which the room, the altar church, whatever study room was actually really cool to look at. Like, it had so many artifacts, so many different books and all of these things. And when we finally come to that, to where he's like, make a choice. And you see each of the sisters deciding on something different in hopes of a different outcome. And knowing, one of them knowing, regardless of what we choose, our outcome is going to be whatever he's already chosen, was very like, oh no, it's true. It's gonna happen. So yeah, it's just, it's a lot to think on. It's a thinker, Spencer. It is. It's Christmas.
Oh, no, I love a good thing. Well, I watch it in October, so that's part of the reason. Yeah, you're
very true, very true. Were there any highlights or issues you guys had with this movie? Start with Amy, because Amy's already...
Formulating thinker thoughts. Highlights...
She's ready to mansplain for us.
Yeah, whoa, mansplain.
Whoa,
yeah.
Mansplain, cool, there you cool, go. Cool. Thank you,
cool.
Abed.
Cool. If I'm talking highlights, I mean, really the cinematography in here is really, really great. I already touched on it once. It highlights the simplicity of the space. It never feels, in the way that it's used, it never feels like everything is too small, except it builds tension and confinement as well. It's such a, like, it almost feels like it should be odder. And I know that I have issues in the past with horror movies that are house horror movies, but we're also in somebody else's house. So I'm like, I don't know how I feel about it, but it was really good at creating not only that unease, which is, again, highlighted by those amazing performances, but like it fed into it. And also the palette, the color palettes, too, were very like.
Very interesting.
Ooh, yeah. Right.
What about you, Spence? Any thoughts, highlights, issues?
I want to highlight a very specific shot in this movie that I thought was like a really great one. It was when sisters were like, you know, like running around in the house, and like it zooms out and it's like the model of the house that he has in a different room. I was like, that's such an interesting shot. Like that was cool. I just thought that was a super cool shot in this movie.
Yeah. No, I agree. I feel like that shot, I think it's towards the last act of the film.
Yeah.
It was really cool because it goes from a practical kind of perspective where, you know, you're following her to this above level shot that looks really great while it's panning out to the full table of it and everything, and how it corresponds to where she's where they're moving into, like the next room, and it shows up in real, like in the real room where they're at.
Yeah.
So
that's neat.
Yeah, that was really cool. Any other thoughts, any issues?
I don't really feel like I have any issues with this movie, because most of like the issues are like built in things for like the story of like, you know, there being like something's not well thought out. Well, it's because blah, 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 blah. So no, I actually don't really have too much of a issue with this movie. I liked it.
I didn't ask, but did you have any issues, Ames?
No.
No? Okay. I need to kind of preface that, you know, I agree with Spencer. Like, that scene was really cool, especially from the top-down perspective for the miniature and the usage of, you know, the effect of her running through the miniature and it being corresponding to the house itself. That, and then there's another scene where what was it? I like the foreboding scenes in the film where like you know that there's probably something hiding or something, you know, looming, and the way the cinematography kind of primes the scene, it makes it look like, okay, something's at the end of the hall and it's not, or something's behind the curtain waiting but it's not, and then in it creates those precedences where it leaves you this false sense of security. And then it totally like betrays you later on with the way things happen. I love the way that's set up throughout the whole film. I even like the way the movie ended, you know, in terms of like going back to my original premise, like what are you believing and what is it, you know, that we are taking from this product, this, I guess, this pitch, if you will, to believe, and what is it that our main characters are walking away with, kind of thing. I don't really have any issues other than, you know, Hugh Grant gives me nightmares, and that's just in every other regular movie.
It was supposed to give you nightmares here, so.
Actually, I felt pretty comfortable in this one, so, you know, because everything else he was in that kind of scared me. So this does bring me to a segment we haven't done in a little while, and that is
what?
That is our fantasy cast. This is a segment we haven't used in a while, but it essentially is us taking prominent roles in the film and then pretty much changing the casting for certain roles and certain key people. So, and if you're familiar with this song. So yeah.
Thanks, Mariah Carey. We know you're coming at us, Lumber Girlfriend.
So,
he did it perfectly.
So when it comes to this film, obviously, like the young women, they played a really great role.
I don't want to replace them.
But I feel like when it comes to villains, we have so many different performers out there, so many different actors, even actresses that we feel could really do the role well, do villainy really well. So if you could fantasy cast this role to whatever actor currently living,
yeah, that's the one that gets
who
me.
Would you pick? So I'll give you a couple seconds to think.
Do you got the Jeopardy music in there? So you give me a little bit of a panic slash heart attack. Anxiety building.
I don't actually. I'm sorry.
Hey, look at that. Right. That's a good one not to have.
But there you go.
It's so friendly. How are we supposed to find a villain with this music?
Find a villain. Find your time villain. Is running out.
Sorry, it's really catchy. Okay, hold on.
Okay. So let's start with Spencer. Spencer seems like he may have one already.
Okay, I have one. my initial thought process was a man with an accent, because you need someone who sounds at least, you know, enticing. And like Hugh Grant, voice wise, does that in this movie. So I was thinking along the lines of maybe like an Idris Elba type Ooh. Character. He could probably knock this out of the park.
Oh, Lord. That would be him so much.
Suck.
It would.
I don't want to see him bad.
He could do it too.
And he'd be really good.
Yeah.
And he was already a bad person in that Hobbs and Shaw movie. So he's played villainy before.
I'm Black Superman.
Yeah. That.
He's so good though. I mean,
Yeah, that's why I thought he'd be pretty dangerous.
That's so wrong.
That's a good choice. I have to admit, that's a really good choice. Thank what you, about you, you, Amy? Oh, I'm sorry. Did you have one more or you're good with that?
No, I'm good with that because like I was ping pong. I was also thinking about Aldous Hodge because I do like him, but
I love Aldous Hodge.
Yes.
Aldous Hodge is so great. Yes. Is he English?
You know what? I thought like that he'd be fine regardless.
All right, Ames, what about you?
So I decided not to go with accents, looking for accents originally, because I was going, what would be more seductive? Or what could be seductive to an American audience? And we're talking about teenage girls. And then my brain was like Kevin Costner and Mr. Brooks. But I was like, he's too old for that. That's going to be really creepy. And I don't need to have that happen. So
I mean, this could have been the groundwork for a Mr. Brooks part two.
Yeah. So I actually I was torn between Josh Brolin, who's a little too old for that. But Timothy Oliphant. Would be kind of that disarming, slightly a little bit goofy, but not too much, but could come in kind of like on the underside of it and just scare the crap out of people.
He played the bad guy in The Girl Next Door.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms, I'm just talking about in terms of like reference back, I'm pretty sure he played probably a bad guy, something else. Was that the only one you had?
That was the one that I settled on because it seemed like the one that really, like you're looking for that, subtle, he can win almost anybody over type of vibe too. Mm. And that's the biggest thing because like if we go to Idris Elba, he's charming and wonderful and I can't handle it. And then I went to Timothy Oliphant and I'm like, he's disarming and he could like get you in that door without too much problem. We're trying to balance that weird like big bad wolf energy just enough to create comfort and then just mess up your head. Like I couldn't figure anybody else out. What about you?
That's a pretty good one.
Those are good ones. Timothy Oliphant definitely would do that. I have two choices. Mm-hmm. I have my American choice and my English choice. Hmm. My American choice, I feel like would just work because of how lovable and how great this guy is as an actor and how much he could switch it up and do what needs to be done for the role, because we've seen him do it before, and that is Danny DeVito.
Lord, that would be so scary. Like, no, could you imagine him just being like, oh yeah, come in, and then yep. Oh no.
And then if you get those scenes where he like scurries in the dark because he's so short, like
oh, Lord.
But my serious choice, and I've been saying this for years,
Danny freaking DeVito.
I feel like this would be a perfect casting. I feel like this would work incredibly just because of their previous work and what they're good at. Matt Smith.
Oh, gosh.
Like, I just
always
feel like...
on no, that Matt it's Smith always hate train.
No,
who was the other guy that played the master?
Talking about the Indian guy?
No, he would be great too. He would be great. No, the one from Tenants era. You can see.
Oh, John Sims.
Yeah. He wouldn't be too bad, but he, some of that manic energy would just bleed over.
Nah, I feel like Matt Smith would be perfect for this role. Matt Smith has that face where it could, he's like the Jim Carrey of like English villainy actors. I feel like he could switch up his face and make him look himself lovable, but he's just a mean actor. Like I feel like he could
those
be.
Those glasses, man. It's those glasses. But yeah. It's just the glasses with the little
and,
shadows.
And think about it. Seriously, think about it. Between the two of you, don't you feel Matt Smith could do that flip from being nice and inviting and warm to the
yes, theological... Yes, we've watched him in Doctor Who. We know what he's capable.
He can definitely do the flip without even questions.
Well, like, that's what I'm saying. So
I know.
That's actually a good choice.
Thank you. See?
It is. It's terribly good.
So wrapping this thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table, talk about whether the film passes or fails and how many monocles. I will start this. That way Spencer, who has waited the longest, can finish this whole train up.
I've been here for months.
In terms of pass or fail, this film passes for me. It was definitely a great film that really got you thinking and had a very unique narrative through it. I absolutely kind of enjoyed this movie. As a conversation piece to several other things that came about after the fact, whether if it was about marketing, whether if it was about faith, or even just the existence of Monopoly. This movie has definitely created a unique conversation within the circles that I'm in, and I do appreciate the filmmakers' thought process and logic for what they put into to make this film a success. As far as monocles are concerned, I'm going to give this film a 4.5 out of 5. I feel like it was definitely a movie that slid under the radar, should have gotten more attention, and absolutely floored me by the end of the film as far as what it was truly trying to say and all the different aspects of what I got out of it. So, Amy.
Yes, so if this film passes or fails, of course it does pass, as you can hear by the way we've been talking about it. While it is not a horror movie in the sense as it's been framed itself, it does carry a very high level of suspense as well as thrillers. It's a very psychological as well, which can add to and heighten your viewing experience. If you watch this in a dark room, it gets even kind of like, ooh, a little bit more. The performances are great. This was definitely, as Eddie said, something that slipped under the radar. It is a sleeper. And I would not be surprised if this came out of left field during award season, which I hope it does, because it really not only had something very unique to say, but also came about it in such a way that the team from A Quiet Place did a great job. In regards to monocles, I'm going to give this a 4.3 out of 5, even though I'm not going to watch it again because it'll scare the crap out of me. I know that this, I can see good filmmaking where it is, and I want to honor them with that score.
Spencer.
Okay, this movie passes for me. I love a movie that comes to the plate and it's like, you're going to think for this movie. I'm like, okay, I'm down for like thinking. Let's do that. This movie did a fantastic job of just building tension throughout because like I rewatched part of it and when we were in that initial part, I'm like, I already know the tension's here. I'm going to skip past this. Like, if you're making me, like, want to, like, skip past things, not because they're bad, but because I don't want to refill the tension that the scenes build, you're doing something really good. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you've got that. You've got the fantastic acting from just everyone who's in this movie. Like, the story, it all just wraps up to being a really good product. Like, I was just blown away walking out of the theater, and I was like, oh, I'm so excited. We're going to talk about this. But then I realized later that it wasn't actually on the schedule. And now it's on the schedule.
It's on the schedule.
So that's pretty awesome. For me, this movie is a 4.5 out of 5. It was a fantastic watch for me, and I had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And also, obviously, big thanks to Spencer for bringing us the attention to this movie so that we could all share it and see it together, because it was definitely a very fun watch. So thank you, Spencer.
Of course.
But yeah, I mean, again, this movie is currently available on streaming. So if you are looking for a chance to check it out, you can definitely find so on all streaming platforms. So. But that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out over at our website at filmlosopherspodcast.com. There we got allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, spooks and terrors, all of the above. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlosopherspodcast.com. You can also check us out over on the web, on the socials, at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at filmlosophy101. You can also check us out at Blue Sky at filmlosopherspodcast. And I think that's about it. I don't know if we're anywhere else.
Everywhere.
Well, yeah, we were just at Threads. You can catch all of our hijinks as well as extra content such as Spencer's The Big Score and Amy's Jane Unseen, which can be found where, Amy?
The only place it's ever lived, which is at Jane Unseen on Instagram and Instagram only. And if you are looking there and going, hey, it doesn't look like you've been updating, unfortunately, my content lives in the episodes. So you're going to have to go find it. Hey!
She just did her own echo. Okay.
Yeah. She doesn't need your effects board.
Apparently not.
Now so. I'm waiting for him to hit the boo. That's don't.
You brought this upon yourself.
No.
Boo.
There you go. yeah, you could also check us out over at over wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audioboom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, and Amazon Music. Tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Filmlosophers and give us a follow or subscribe. And if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
We have.
Yes, please.
We are still well within the holiday season. We got more to come, so stay tuned because we got some stuff planned. That we do. But yeah, that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. So from all of us here, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Still intern Amy.
Class dismissed.